Peace be with you. Friends, on this fifth Sunday of Easter, we have an extraordinary gospel. Again, like last week, it's very short, it's very punchy, but it is at the heart of the Christian thing. It's the beginning of Jesus' Last Supper discourse, which is the longest discourse of Jesus anywhere in the New Testament. It's this lengthy, spiritually incredibly rich monologue he gives the night before he dies. And this really is the very beginning of it. Here's a little bit of what he says. "My children, I'll be with you only a little while longer." And that's true. It's the night before he dies. So it's like a last will and testament, if you want. It's Jesus now speaking to us at the end of his life. "As I have loved you, so you should also love one another. This is how all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Okay, I know you're likely to think, yeah, I've heard that like 100 times before. It seems now like almost a banality. No, no. To understand Jesus here, we have to understand what a strange thing love is, the way the word is being used here. I think of Dostoevsky's great line that authentic love is a harsh and dreadful thing. If you take this in some sentimentalized way or just stating a sort of psychological banality, you've not read it right. You've not understood it. Not far from my house, there's a Unitarian church, and I go by it a lot because I walk or I go by it in the car. And outside there's a big sign, and it says, "Love your neighbor," right? And then next to neighbor is a little asterisk that draws your attention down, and it says, "Your black neighbor, your brown neighbor, your gay neighbor, your transgender neighbor, your bisexual neighbor," and it goes through this list. So I go by that sign all the time. And every time I do, I think, okay, I get it, but what precisely do you mean by love? Love your neighbor, right. And all those people mention, yeah. But tell me precisely what you mean by love, because the suspicion I have is it might be something different than what Jesus is talking about here. Now, this is kind of a well-worn path, but the English language, which is very rich, incomparably rich, really, and the vocabulary of English is extraordinary. Nevertheless, there's a real poverty in English in regard to this little word, love. Because we use that one word, love, to cover such a variety of things. And so a lot of ambiguity sets in when English language users begin talking about love. I'll give an example. We use the same word to say, "I love popcorn. I love my grandmother. I love God. I love going to the Cubs game." So all of those things, and they couldn't be more different. And the texture of the experience in each one is so different, yet we use the same word, love. So Jesus says, love one another. All right, well, what do you mean by that? Well, see, the Greek of the New Testament is actually far richer here, because the Greek of the New Testament includes a variety of words, all of which are translated love in English, but mean very different things. And I want to just review this with you, because I think it's very clarifying when it comes to this central command of Jesus. Here are the three words I'm talking about in Greek: eros, philia, and agape. Eros, philia, and agape. All of those are translated as love, but they mean very different things. Okay, what does eros mean? Well, because our word erotic is derived from that. I would say something like this. It means a passionate, intense desire for something or for someone. And so you see the obvious sexual overtone of erotic desire. It's a desire to have or to possess. It's intense. It drives you toward the possession of a thing or a person. Now, mind you, I'm not bad-mouthing the erotic. I mean, let's face it, none of us would be here unless there were something like erotic desire. None of us would be alive unless we had something like this for food and drink. It's an intense, passionate drive. I mentioned I love popcorn, right? We'll say that in English. The other night, I love popcorn. And I might take it as a midnight snack. But what I usually do is I'll take a small bowl to make sure I only take a limited amount of popcorn. Well, the other night, the bag was right toward the bottom. I thought, oh, just a little bit left. I'll take the bag down with me. So I'm watching TV, and I don't know what. I must have been exceptionally hungry. And I just devoured this popcorn. And I finished it, and then I got up to the bathroom. I look at myself in the mirror. I've got curls of popcorn on my face. I've got bits of it on my shirt. I thought, you're like a heroin addict. This is like you're addicted to this thing. And it's true. I have that kind of, I just love it. I love popcorn. If it were as dangerous as heroin, I'd be in some serious trouble, you know? Well, that's what Eros is like. It's this passionate desire for something or for someone. Okay, now, the second word, philia. Think of Philadelphia, right? The city of brotherly love, we say. Well, philia in Greek has a sense of friendship. It's the affection between friends. Think when you say, I like that guy. Yeah, she's great. I really like her a lot. She's someone I want to spend time with. That guy, he's like my buddy. I like spending time with him. That's philia. Now, you might say, you know, it's less self-interested than Eros. Eros has that sense of almost like an animal passion for food, for drink, for sex, to possess the other. Well, philia isn't really like that. Philia is like, no, you're my friend. I want to be with you. Not so much I want to possess you. I want to be with you. I want to spend time with you. Well, Jesus is not saying to his disciples, I want you to have eros for one another. I hope that's pretty clear. He's not urging them, you must love one another in that erotic sense. Nor is he saying, in the Greek that's used there, I want you to have philia for one another. See, that would mean I want you all to be friends. So Peter and James and John and all of you, I want you all to be friends. I think there's a very good chance that the disciples, some of them, didn't get along with other disciples. They're all following Jesus. They're all chosen by the Lord. But did it mean they all liked each other? That they all would happily spend time together? Not necessarily. And he's not commanding that. I want you all to be friends. Nor is he telling his followers down through the centuries, you have to be friends with everybody. No, that's not what he says. The verb that's used, and now the distinction I hope becomes clear, not eros, not philia. The verb used here, the noun rather, is agape. Agape. Translated love, indeed, like the other ones. But what does it mean? You probably heard me talk a lot about Thomas Aquinas' famous characterization. He would have called it caritas in his Latin. To will the good of the other. To will the good of the other. That's agape. And that's the command that Jesus gives to his disciples and to us. That's how people will know that you're my follower, that you have agape for one another. You will the good of each other. Mind you, it's not a desire to possess, that's eros, nor is it a desire to spend time with, that's philia. It's a desire for the good of the other. Therefore, it's a self-sacrificing move. Maybe this way, it's commitment to the other. That's agape. We're so good, we sinners, at getting around these things. What do we end up saying very often? What do we act out very often? Is I pretend I'm willing your good, But in fact, I'm desiring what's good for you that you might then give me something good in return. I'll be just or kind to you that you might be just or kind to me. That's not agape. That's not willing the good of the other. That's just using the other for my own good. Agape, love as Jesus commands it, is breaking free of the black hole of one's own egotism, right, fellow sinners, that draws the whole world into me and my preoccupations. Jesus is saying, I want you to have this quality that breaks free of that. That's love as he's commanding it. Can I give you a concrete example here? One of the great saints of the 20th century, Maximilian Kolbe, right? The man who famously gave himself in exchange for a man that the Nazis were going to kill. He said, take me instead. And I'm a Catholic priest. Take me in his place. And the Nazis did, and they starved him to death, which is one of the worst ways to die. Did Maximilian Kolbe know the man very well? I don't think so. Was he his friend? Did he have philia toward him? Did he want to spend time with him? I mean, I don't know is my honest answer. I don't think there's any evidence of that. But Kolbe shows in the most dramatic way possible, agape, a self-forgetting, self-sacrificing, willing the good of the other. That's what Jesus is talking about. Not eros, not philia, nothing wrong with those two things, but that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about this kind of self-surrendering love. You know, a great biblical place to look, if you want to follow up from this sermon, go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You probably heard it read at a wedding at some point in your life. But listen to Paul, because Paul here is not talking about eros and not talking about philia. He's talking about agape, and it's rendered love, of course, in English. But listen to him. Love, agape, is patient. Now, see, why patient? Well, because it's not interested in its own good. It's interested in the good of the other. And therefore, it's going to bear all things. It's going to put up with everything because it wants the good of the other. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant. Why? Because it's taking you out of the ego and its preoccupations. It positively wants what's good for you. Love does not insist on its own way. See, that's the mark of egotism. You might say it's the mark of the erotic form of love, too. It's, I want this for me. I want to possess it. Love doesn't. Agape doesn't do that. It doesn't insist on its own way. Listen, it does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. See, if you're just all about yourself, well, you might rejoice in wrongdoing because doing the wrong thing might benefit me, right? But real love cares for the good of the other. Therefore, it's not interested in wrongdoing. It rejoices in the truth. And then beautifully, it bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. That's not eros. It's not philia. It's the self-emptying, self-forgetting love of the other. It's willing the good of the other. And that's, everybody, the command that Jesus gives the night before he dies. That's how people will know that we are his disciples. And God bless you.